We've heard a lot in recent days and weeks and months about the politics of resentment. Liberal columnists and pundits have bent over backwards trying to understand middle America, while others have sneered at their ignorance of how many citizens feel left out or left behind in a world that is increasingly multicultural and in which the benefits of immigration and consequent diversity are both obvious and taken for granted. For some reason, in spite of Barcelona and more killings of and by policemen and all the dreadful news of the week, I can't quite shake the events of Charlottesville a couple of weeks ago from my mind. There's something about the ugliness and the hatred and just plain wrong-headed racism of the white supremacist movement in which I find myself pitying the perps while loathing the ideas they espouse. It's the underbelly of identity politics. And among the consequences of Charlottesville for us is that whatever Confederate symbols, memorials, statues and the like might have been yesterday or might yet be, today in this moment they are one of the sort of rallying points for real ugliness. I'm grateful for the thoughtful and careful way in which those of you involved with the cathedral have been thinking through what to do about the Jackson Lee Memorial Bay. I do worry that telling lots of stories, including being clear about the causes, cost, and consequence of the Civil War, still allows some measure, if we're not careful, of moral equivalence between those who would end slavery and those who would keep their economic system intact. And I realize that even such a benign statement can be controversial as an interpretation of the war. But when I think about the memorials next door, I'm now turning from preaching to meddling, by the way. When I think about the memorials next door, my fantasy would be to see if it's feasible to carve over the stones or put a statue or something in front of the stones beneath the windows that have declared the virtues of the gentlemen in the windows and replace them with graphic depictions of dead Union and dead Confederate soldiers. And a graphic depiction of slaves in fetters, or in a market perhaps, but something that is just as visceral about the cause and the cost and the consequence of that war, just as visceral as the windows. I floated that with the dean and he smiled benignly. I know that even talking about this, especially from the pulpit, can stir strong and even disturbing feelings for some of us. But our scriptures have something to say to us as we navigate troubled waters in a land where, wittingly or unwittingly, the mob has been blessed and released. Any of us can find some basis for resentment, some remembered hurt, some situation in which we did not hold power. Even well-to-do white men like me, who have benefited enormously from privilege, can usually remember some time of relative powerlessness in our lives, even if we have to go back to childhood or some painful memory of losing out on a promotion or even perhaps being fired from a job. Any one of us can find the memory of resentment. And resentment flares when we find that our most basic and often hidden expectations as how the world is supposed to work are not as basic and reliable as we had assumed. The world is supposed to be fair, supposed to give us a fair shake. Good work should be rewarded, bad action should be punished, and so on. But the truth is that often bad things happen to perfectly good people. I believe it's a saying that originates in the 12-step movement, says, a hidden expectation is a resentment under construction. Our resentments are usually closely aligned to some feeling of powerlessness. So let's think about Joseph. Joseph, who had been himself resented by his brothers as their father's favorite son, was almost murdered, was sold into slavery, then taken to Egypt. Fast forward, and Joseph has become an honored servant in the house of the Pharaoh, and there is famine in the land of Israel. And his brothers come seeking relief, pleading for relief, without knowing that it is their own brother to whom they are pleading. Today we hear that portion of the story that is an early example of something really important for us to hear and grasp. It's an early example of faith beyond resentment. It is an early example of someone exhibiting great trust in God and letting go resentment, or capacity to trust God in such a way as to allow foregoing revenge, allowing the possibility of reconciliation. Of course, that's easier when the tables are turned, when it's clear who was in the wrong, when the offense is in the past. But even so, Joseph does not chastise his brothers. He begs them instead to accept the gift of life from the one who is the source of all life, who has used the one they despised as an instrument of their own salvation. You see, a black person can save the life of a white supremacist. And a white supremacist can open the eyes of the one who shut down the coal mine to something in themselves, in turn making for positive change in their community. Faith beyond resentment is transformative. And Jesus, what's going on in this story of Jesus and the Canaanite woman? In all the times that I've read and preached on this story, I've always called her the Syrophoenician woman, as in the other Gospels, but Matthew calls her Canaanite. I've never really focused on that before. He's choosing a term that would have been anachronistic for those who were reading the Gospels and hearing them for the first time. As one commentator has said, calling this woman Canaanite would be a bit like calling a modern Norwegian a Viking. It's way out of context. And so the Jews hearing it would have immediately remembered and known about the Canaanites who were in the promised land when the Hebrews came into it. And they were told to subdue the Canaanites and have nothing to do with them and not to intermarry. The Canaanites would be despised. So it's a Canaanite woman, a woman, a loser, a woman from an oppressed peoples who comes to Jesus, a woman who was to be shown no mercy. And so here is Matthew making the point that this woman is exhibiting a faith that is beyond resentment and reminding Jesus of the truest nature of the original promise to Abraham, whose people will inhabit the whole earth. Her faith beyond resentment is transformative, foundational even, for the mission to the Gentiles, and so for the possibility that every one of us can also know right relationship with God and our neighbors. We follow Jesus. Jesus, who was a victim of all the violent ways in which we seek to manage our anxieties, address our resentments, punish what we see as wrong, and so on and so on. Talk about reasons for resentment, but even on the cross, Jesus is begging forgiveness for the perpetrators then and across the centuries for each of us. All well and good. Forgiveness, as we know, is easier said than done. That often conflict will end up looking more like divorce than reconciliation. Reconciliation is always possible, but only for those who stay within the community who need it. But in the face of the division so manifest in Charlottesville, and in the reality that symbols have power and meaning, and that power and meaning can shift, I still want to do something to stand what is right and good and holy in the face of the ugliness, but I don't want to live in orientation toward the ugliness. I don't want to just be resistant. I want to do something symbolic or otherwise that makes a difference. And so I want to participate in symbolic action without living my life in reference to the evil we promise to resist in our baptisms. Of course, I will resist ugliness and racism in all the ways open to me, and I hope you will too. But I also want to stand for things that are good for their own sake. So as some of you have, I've stood outside prisons during executions, knowing that my presence was not going to stop the execution, but standing for something that matters. And so I'm going to, as a personal choice, join the Unity March that's going to take place here in Northwest DC on September the 10th, a symbolic act of resistance, perhaps, and hope. And you're welcome to join me if you're so moved. Something I need to do for myself so that I'm not living constantly in reaction to ugliness or driven by my own unexamined resentments. The antidote to resentment, the antidote to the violence which gives rise to resentment, the antidote to the violence that flows from resentment, is to renew our trust in God for life, to remember what really matters, to forgive where we can, and to aspire to forgiveness where it's not yet possible for us, rather than nursing and rehearsing our resentments. But like Joseph and the Canaanite woman, being ministers of real life, wherever we can, symbolic or otherwise, placing ourselves physically and spiritually where we stand and live toward what is right and good and holy. Do not be distressed or angry with yourselves, for God sent me before you to preserve life. Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Let us, as ever, continue our response to the gospel in silence and in prayer.